Off the Ball Rugby.
There is no price, there's no World Cup, there's nothing that can replace your health. There's nothing bigger in the game of rugby than keeping your players safe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.
18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Now then, one of the fascinating storylines ahead of this year's Premier League season kicking off is that of Brentford, certainly from an Irish standpoint. They are away to Nottingham Forest on Sunday at 2 p.m. It's a game that you'll hear full live commentary of on Off the Ball on Sunday afternoon. And I'm delighted to say that Ian Westbrook of the BBC and of a brilliant Brentford podcast as well is with us on the line. Ian, how are you keeping?
I'm fine, thanks, Aaron. How are you?
All good, all good. So we were discussing the optimism levels around various clubs this week. And I mentioned a hopeometer that the Athletic had done in the build-up to this season. Brentford comes out of that with a 56% optimism rate, but only five clubs in the Premier League have a greater sense of pessimism about them. Is that about right, where you're feeling a little bit 50-50 about how hopeful you should feel at the moment?
I think so. I think because we're going into a period of uncertainty, I think most of us have been watching Brentford for a long time. I've been watching Brentford my entire life since I was a kid. Trust the process. You know, nobody expected we'd lose Thomas Frank and Brian Abumo and Christian Norgaard, all of them this summer. But we've got the owner, Matthew Benham, who's a Brentford fan, director of football, Phil Giles. And they've really been behind everything that's happened in the last 10 to 15 years. In fact, we've gone from, in effect, League Two in 2009 to the Premier League now. So obviously no one wants to lose all those people in one go, but we trust what they're doing. And a lot of people are saying, oh, Keith Andrews never managed before, Brentford are going down. Nobody knows. I've got no idea if he's a good manager or not, because he's never managed. So people are just rushing to write us off, which is why I think us long-term fans don't think we're going down. I mean, we may not finish 10th like last year, but I don't think we'll be in any trouble.
It's really interesting. So Keith Andrews used to sit where I'm sitting right now. He used to present a show for us here. And one of the things that you definitely get from Keith is the relationships that he cultivates with people. He's very interested in people, very interested in you. And you can tell that he has that same level with the Brentford players, because they have those mic'd up videos going out. And I watched a bit of that on YouTube earlier, and it's really, really interesting. But also, it's stating the bloody obvious here, but I'd kind of forgotten that, you know, he knows all of these players anyway because of his work last year. I mean, he's been lauded for his work as a set piece coach. I'm well aware that he's been there for a while, but you just need to remind yourself that yes, he's new as a manager, but he is not new whatsoever when it comes to his relationship with these players.
That's right. I mean, Brentford always believe in continuity. So it's been quite rare over recent years for us to bring in a manager from outside. So back in 2011, Uwe Rosler left us to go to Wigan. Mark Warburton was director of football. He became the manager. And then again, when Dean Smith left to go to Villa in 2018, Thomas Frank was his assistant. He got the job. Now, to be honest, we all thought that one of the other assistant coaches, a guy called Justin Cochrane, when Thomas Frank left, would take over from Thomas Frank. He went to Spurs with Thomas Frank. Keith Andrews wasn't quite last man standing, but nearly, you know, one of the people who didn't go across London. So continuity is important. Exactly as you say, he knows the players. It's not like somebody coming in, oh, I don't like you, I don't like you. They can do a lot of the same things from last season. If you look at his success as set-piece coach, which he joined us a year ago now, we conceded, I think, the fewest goals and set-pieces in the entire Premier League last season. I think scored the second or third highest numbers. Whatever he did last year in his job, he got right. So from that point of view, he's a good appointment. It's just, you know, we need to see how he is as a manager.
Yeah, it's one of those things as well that he's definitely going to be somebody who is a manager who uses the carrot rather than the stick. I think that's fair to say. And there definitely is, you know, it's a cliched thing, but it feels that modern management has gone that way. And the sort of authoritarian management style is kind of over. Now, I'm not saying that's a sign that success will come for Keith Andrews, but it's something else that you can be a little bit more hopeful in.
I think Brentford always go on about how what a good culture there is at the club. Thomas Frank used to say, there's no dickheads signed. Yeah. So when they look at players, it's not just, are they a good footballer? Are they a good person? Will they fit in with the culture at the club? So things like Ian Wisser allegedly going on strike or whatever is going on there is very unusual. you know, players have a good relationship. When players leave, they nearly always leave in the right way. So like Brian Mbeumo left in the right way. When he comes back to Manchester United in September, he'll get a massive round of applause. He genuinely seems to care about the club, and that's because of the whole way that the culture works and everybody cares about each other. That's how it looks, certainly to us fans, you know, from off the pitch. So, yeah, that, I mean, Andrews has obviously bought into that when he joined the club, and he's going to continue it, it seems.
Yeah, I was quite surprised to hear him talk about Wissa in the way he did yesterday. There was no negativity coming from Keith there. I was like, have I got this story wrong? But Wissa is a little bit of an Isak situation at Brentford, right?
But yeah, exactly. It seems to be exactly the same. And no one actually said definitively, yes, he's gone on strike. Yes, he's refused to train. That's all in the media. So we don't actually know, but that's what appears to have happened. That he, you know, maybe he's seen a boomer go and think, I want a piece of that. But he's got a year left in his contract when we've got an option to extend it. So in effect, he's got 2 years left. There's no way we were going to sell Mbeumo and Wissa together in the summer. You know, that was never going to happen. And he must have known that. So I think unless Brentford get a replacement, he's not going to go, you know, and then he's going to have to put up with it. You know, so far, Kelleher came in, who you obviously know. He came in for Flecken. Norgaard's gone, but we've got Jordan Henderson instead. Mbeumo's gone, and we're about to sign a guy called Dango Itara from Bournemouth. So the three major players who've gone, they've all been replaced. So if we get a replacement for Wissa, then he'll go. But if he doesn't, then he'll end up staying and having to put up with it.
Yeah, Utara's a great player as well. So all the other players that you've mentioned there, they've been really, really good replacements. I know maybe Henderson is a bit more of a short-term thing, but I'm really interested to see how he goes this season. And I think that's a really smart piece of business. And just on Wissa, like it's very easy to point to these two factors as to why Brentford did well last year. But when you've got a guy in your team like Brian Mbeumo who scores 20 Premier League goals and someone like Ioan Wissa who scored 19 Premier League goals, I mean, that's the two vital ingredients there for a mid-table finish for a team who might have ordinarily finished a little bit lower than that. God, it leaves a chasm this year though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, every team to stay up, you need a decent striker. We had Ivan Toney in the first 2 years and Mbeumo developed. We had Mbeumo for 6 years. I think it was either the first or second season the Premier hit the post about seven or eight times.
Yeah.
But he improved that side of his game. But it's not just that, it's the defence as well. So people, obviously, again, someone you know, Nathan Collins, he played every minute of the season last year. I think he was the only outfield player in the whole Premier League to do that. And people look at our prospects for this season. The defence is unchanged. And in fact, it's actually stronger because Aaron Hickey's back from injury, Rico Hembe's back from injury. So we're building from a solid base. That was another part of the reason why we finished in 10th last year.
Talk to us about Nathan Collins then. As the negative bordering on scathing view of Nathan Collins in Ireland is that we wish we could have the Brentford version of Nathan Collins playing for the Republic of Ireland whenever he goes to international breaks. I think there are other factors at play there, given the quality of player he's surrounded by at international level is not quite at the same standard it is at Brentford, and I think he's a wonderful player. What's the view of Nathan Collins from a Brentford fan standpoint?
He started very slowly in his first season. He had a bit of a nightmare in the first 6 months. He made quite a lot of mistakes. And there was a game, I think, against Wolves at Christmas in his first season when he scored at least one own goal, might have been two own goals. And the Wolves was his old team, an absolute shocker. But he improved in the second half of the season. Last season, he was outstanding. So he played every single minute of every game. And he's now been made captain. And that was everybody's popular choice. You know, he's a real leader out there. And in fact, he went to the friendly at QPR just the day he got named captain. And I never really noticed before how much he's a leader, but watching him in that game, he really is in charge of everybody. He's telling people where to go. He's praising people who do something well. He's having a word if someone doesn't do something quite right. He's a great player. You know, someone who maybe in 12, one or two years' time, people will be knocking the door trying to sign him. He's just developed. You can see him develop, and he's developed really quickly as well. So he's vital for us next season.
Is there going to be an expectation on Collins this season to play in a different system, or is Keith Andrews basically picking up where Thomas Frank left off?
I think defence will be the same. I mean, Thomas Frank used to switch between a back three and a back four, but most of the last season he stuck to a back four, and I think Andrews would be the same. So in the last 2 months or so, he was with Sepp van den Berg, who used to play for Liverpool, and they formed quite a good partnership in the last 10 games, I think it was. So that will be the starting centre-half partnership, I think. Ethan Pinnock, who's played for us for 6-7 years, has now dropped. It's very sad. You know, I think he won't be a starter anymore. But yeah, Collins will be playing as part of a two. And I think that will carry on next season.
On Caoimhín Kelleher then, we're not 100% sure if he's going to play this weekend. I think he's carrying a little bit of a, a knock. I mean, when it comes to what you've seen of Kelleher, what you believe he can actually do, is there a chance that actually he could be a bit of an upgrade on Flecken, or is that me with my green-tinted spectacles firmly on?
I think he will. I mean, I've not seen that much of him, to be honest. I've only seen highlights on, you know, Liverpool games and Ireland games. But we've been after him for a while. We were after him last year, apparently, as well. Flecken was a decent goalkeeper. Excuse me. Made some mistakes every now and again. I think most of us think Kelleher is an upgrade on Flecken. So I think that's actually a good signing. Also, he's 4 or 5 years younger than Flecken as well. So, you know, long-term could be a keeper for a while, as Flecken left after a couple of years. So, yeah, we're quite pleased with that signing. He missed the friendly last week against Borussia with a minor injury, and they said he's touch and go for Sunday. But once he's fit, he will be number one keeper. So, see how he does.
It is, like, as we now know, the team that Irish people will be following. It'll be Irish neutrals' team of the season. It was probably Ipswich last season, Brentford this season. It's not exactly a club that's had a glittering array of Irish talent going back into its history. However, there are a couple that pop up. Like, if I were to ask you for the best Irish player to play for Brentford, is potentially one of the current crop actually going to nudge their way in there, or would you be going back to somebody like Stephen Hunt, who I think his stint at Brentford is often overlooked and underrated a touch?
Stephen Hunt was a great player. I mean, I remember being very busy. He was almost hyperactive at times. He contributed a lot to the Martin Allen team in the early 2000s. Also, going back before that, Chris Hughton played for us. We had one season in the second tier in 92-93, and he played for us in that season. In fact, I think he got injured in a game at Sunderland that ended his career, unfortunately, so we had him. You're testing me now. I'm trying to remember other Irish players in the past. Oh, those two spring to mind. I think Nathan Collins is going to be the best of the bunch so far. He's, you know, as I said before, such a classy player. Yeah. Stephen Hunt is worrying by Brentford fans in particular. He's very popular at the time.
It must be an amazing feeling to be a fan of a club and knowing that you're in the glory days right now. So far, the glory days so far. I know there was a fifth place finish back in the mid part of the 20th century, maybe going back a bit further than that again, but within reason, these are the best days ever.
Yeah, that was in the 1930s. We were in the first division for 5 years either side of the Second World War. It is. I mean, as I said, you know, I've been watching it since I started in Division 4 in the 1970s. So I've seen his North 4 division. Even my son, who's in his 20s, he's seen his North 4 divisions as well. So it's quite a rapid turnaround, really. I never thought we'd be in the Premier League. So getting into the Championship was great. We had 7 years there. But it definitely is the best days ever. And, you know, it's going to end at some point. All medium-sized clubs go down eventually. So we just make the most of it while we're there. You know, seeing us play Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City on an equal basis, seeing us go to these grounds, seeing us win at City, seeing us beat Liverpool United at home and Arsenal, it's amazing, yeah.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things on a journey through Latin America.
I'm nervous and police will use tear gas.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh,
Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
Diverted has been named among Apple Podcasts' best so far list of 2025.
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. All 10 parts are available now for free via Apple Podcasts.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.
There has been a sense that due to the ownership and the model at Brentford, that it is a football club a little bit ahead of the curve. Do you think that's still the case? Because it was definitely the case 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the model has been for the last few years, buy cheap players, sell them on high. So that started really, a guy called Scott Hogan. That's right. Bought him from Rochdale for $1 million, sold him to Villa for 12, I think it was. Ollie Watkins another one bought for 2 or 3 million, sold to Villa for 30, Saïd Benrahma, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now Brian Mbeumo bought him for 5 or 6, sold for 74. So that is the way we've made the money to get where we are now. I think that continues. We just bought a guy called Anthony Milambo from Feyenoord for about 25 million, I think. He's got massive potential. We might sell him in 3 years' time for 60 million. So I think the model is still there. We spot young players, maybe ones who either have gone under the radar. And that's how we survive, because we haven't got a massive stadium. We haven't got 60,000 people every week. So we need to make money in other ways. And that the model is definitely still working, although it's obviously harder now because we're competing at that level.
Yeah, and it feels like a lot of other clubs have caught up in terms of the cutting edge that Brentford have brought to things, that Brentford have necessarily had to bring to things. A lot of, you know, bigger clubs have had more money than sense, really, which has not never been the case, or never something you could accuse Brentford of. It's actually quite, if you want to use a metric for how to spot future exciting talent, just looking at Brentford and what signings they're making or where they're splashing the cash is a really good idea. And I think that the name that you mentioned there, Anthony Milambo, if Brentford are spending big money on a 20-year-old, you know that this guy's got massive potential.
Yeah, that's right. There's very few duff signings. Most players we've signed have been really good. Obviously, some of them haven't worked out. But the majority of them have been really good, either stayed with us for a while or said we've sold them on 2 or 3 years later, you know, all around the Premier League and other divisions as well.
When it comes to that idea that players do move on to different clubs if money comes in, it does seem to be something that the club really embraces. I think other clubs maybe kind of balk at the idea that a footballer would want to go on to do other things. Like even listening to Keith Andrews' press conference yesterday, he was talking about Brian Mbeumo being a real success story for this club. And when he says that, he does talk, I'm sure he's talking about the fee that they have received, the fee that they paid in the first instance, and the turnover on a player like Brian Mbeumo. I'd say Keith is very much in tune with the way the hierarchy at the club are thinking.
I think it has to be, because we're never going to spend £100 million on a player. And also, we're probably a hard sell. If a player wants to come to London, they probably want to join Chelsea rather than us. But if you say to them, right, you can come to us for, say, 2 or 3 years, develop your game, then you'll get a chance for a bigger move. You know, that's how, if you say, right, you're coming to Brentford for 10 years, a lot of these players, I'm not going to do that. So you have to show them what happens to other players. Show them if they come to us as a smaller club, they might dream of playing for a bigger club, but they can show what they can do with us and get that move. Brian Mbeumo is a brilliant example. It's not just the money. We signed him as a, you know, he was 19 when we signed him. He was from a French first division club. His development, he's played 250 games or something. I've seen most of the games he's played. You can just see how he's developed, how he's, you know, changed his game. I said about goal scoring. 2 years ago, he was hitting the post every week, and now he's scoring. You can just watch how he's become such a good player. I really hope he does well, not against us, but he deserves to have a really successful career. And that is, you sell these players the dream. Play well for us for 2 or 3 years, then you get your big move. So Brentford benefit and they benefit as well. That's how it works.
This is a question that really nobody can ever take a fully certain stab at, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think Brian Mbeumo could be a success at Manchester United?
That depends. I mean, I wish he'd gone to a club in the Champions League, because then he could really show his potential. Man United might, who knows? They might do really well this year. He could be a success there. He's a great player. He really is. I'm not just saying that. I've watched him play. He's a fantastic player. And I think he'd do well wherever he goes, to be honest. He can only improve them, definitely.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about was just maybe your early days as a Brentford fan. I know we've kind of touched on it briefly. I was reading earlier on the years around the 1970s, 1980s. 14 consecutive seasons in the third division is quite an achievement. I mean, it has to be one of the biggest yo-yo tiers out there, the current League One. To stay in that tier for 14 straight years must have been a weird experience as a football fan.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't playoffs at the start. So we went up in 1978 and the playoffs started middle of the 80s, I think. So a lot of those years, there was only three teams going up. So what it meant was, I think in a lot of those seasons, we finished like between 9th and the 12th or something like that. So you get to the middle of April, there was nothing to play for. So we went up in 78. We flirted with relegation a couple of times. We were near the top a couple of times, but most of it was just being in mid-table. We had one good FA Cup run in 1989. We got to quarterfinals. Other than that, it was fairly, most seasons were much the same, to be honest. When I started in Division 4, as I said, We went up in my first season, down in my second season because we sold our top scorer. And then we were like mid-table Division 4. But the club was really sort of not that well run in the 70s and 80s. We went up in 92, and that was the first time in my life I'd seen us in the top two divisions. And again, we sold our top scorer, Dean Holdsworth, and came straight back down again. So it's only really, the club's only really been well run since Matthew Benham got involved in the late 2000s. So most of my personal football life has been at like third tier, League One level. So that's why this is so exciting at the moment, really.
How quickly did you realise that Matthew Benham and his reign was going to be an unbelievable success?
Well, you don't really imagine that it's going to happen at first. I said, I've watched so much football in the League One level. This guy comes in and says, I want to make the club, I want to get to the Premier League. You don't really believe it because it just seems so unlikely. But he's done it very gradually. And the fact we haven't gone and splashed out hundreds of millions of pounds, we've done it in a sensible way. We were 7 years in the Championship, but that's fine. You know, that is for a club like, it's pointless us overspending yourself and just ending up going bust. There's no point in that at all. You know, back in the mid to late 2000s, we were rattling buckets outside the ground. The club was losing money. That's when he first came in and put some money in to sort of save the club. So you didn't realise it at first, but you just sort of see the gradual improvement. Then we're in the Championship and you think, well, you know, who knows? But it certainly wasn't expected at the beginning. He was just stabilising things.
There was a sense of mystery at the start, if I recall correctly, where there was a call and a shout out from the club for investment, and then this mystery supporter had started to feed money in. What changed in the intervening few years? Was it a sense that the success was imminent and he reckoned it was a worthwhile venture, or was this just a super fan of Brentford who liked to keep a little bit of a low profile, and that's why it was shrouded in a bit of mystery at the start?
It's probably the second. He is a lifelong Brentford fan. You never see him interviewed. He won't do interviews, so he's got a very low... People know who he is. You'll see him out, turn up to games sometimes in like jeans and T-shirts sort of thing. He's not like dressed in a suit or anything like that. He likes to keep out of the way. When we sing his name at games, he hates it, apparently.
Right.
So I think it was a fan trying to save his club, basically. And then it sort of went from there. And he always said he had ambition to get to the Premier League. But before, when we built the new stadium, which was all down to him and his vision... Originally, I think it was going to be 20,000 capacity. And he saw that at Brighton, when they went up to the Premier League, even though they had a new stadium, they had to do a load of work to make it Premier League ready. So he said, right, we're going to change the design of the ground, knock it off the capacity so they need more room for TV or something. So that when we went up, the ground was Premier League ready already without having to do a load of work on it. So he's got a long-term vision for the club. His vision was getting into the Premier League. He's done it. Now it's to be a sustainable Premier League club, maybe get into Europe. It's a fan's dream, isn't it? Mm. And also, from our point of view, it's great because, you know, anything he does, he's doing it for the right reasons. It's not like you see some club owners just trying to make money out of their clubs. Most things he does you agree with, but if you don't agree with what he's done, at least you know he's done it with the best intentions at heart. He's not trying to screw the club or anything. So that's having him as owner is fantastic.
What is the verdict then? What is your genuine expectation about Keith Andrews in his first season as a manager?
As I said, I really don't know. I mean, I think, as I said, we're not going to go down.
Are you sure about that?
I've said it in writing, so I'm sure about it. Look, you can't. Anything could happen. We could get injuries to Thiago and Shaw. We could go down. I don't think we will. Hopefully, we'll do a good job. But it's really hard to judge somebody with no track record. I think the positive things are, as we said, he knows the players, he knows the way we play, he knows how the club works. The players, from what we've seen online and, seem to have a good relationship with him. We've got a lot of decent players. As I said, defence is very strong. I saw a cameo of Milamba. He looked good. Henderson, I think, will be a good... He won't be as good as Norgaard, but he'll be a good replacement for Norgaard. Nobody's too good to go down, but I think we've got a lot of decent players in that squad. So he needs to get... experience obviously in the job. The expectation is that we will be a Premier League club in 12 months' time. I think with so much change, that's all you can really sort of hope for at this stage.
And does that automatically mean that that's a success for the manager? Like if they're plodding along, playing well, but plodding along in 17th all season long, is that a secure job?
I think given the circumstances, it definitely is. I mean, Thomas Frank would never have been sacked. Even if we got relegated, I don't think we'd have sacked him. We've sacked one manager in about 12 years. We don't do that. They look at all the... Matthew Benham's company deals in data, as you probably know. So Thomas Frank lost 8 of his first 10 matches in charge. It looks the day, some clubs would have sacked him. It looks the day he said, right, we've been a bit unlucky here, unlucky there. You know, they're doing the right things. And then it turned around when we started winning games and obviously, you know, went from there to there. So I don't think if we were bottom at Christmas, they'd sack him. I generally don't think that. So they sacked one. When Warburton left, we got a guy called Marinus Dijkhuizen. And things they could see on the training ground, where he got sacked after 2 months. But that was in 2015. Nobody's been sacked since then. So I think given all the churn, just being in the Premier League in 12 months' time will be a success. And then you can build from there, really. But, I mean, I assume that Matthew Benham and the others are looking higher than that. But from my point of view, I think, you know, solid mid-table, that will do us.
Definitely. I think that would be quite a successful season, given the goals that you've lost as well. Just one other thing on Andrews. There is something that we're going to be paying close attention to, which is when Roy Keane is an analyst for the first Brentford game of the season. I'm not sure if he's going to be on this Sunday afternoon when Martin O'Neill is on TalkSport talking about Keith Andrews. Fair to say that they might, and I'm just projecting here, they might take a little bit of glee in any lack of success for Keith Andrews in this coming season. How aware of you are that, and how big a concern could that be, that sort of noise getting into the club?
I mean, I've heard the Martin O'Neill clip where he talks about Andrew. I've heard the Roy Keane stuff. I don't think they'd be that bothered. I really don't. There's more important things to worry about than what the pundits are saying. I think pundits have sort of, you know, slagged us off before, so I don't think anyone's going to lose too much sleep over that. You know, some clubs seem to be delighted, oh, Brentford are going down this year. Well, you know, they can think that, and the club will take it in their stride, I would have thought.
Yeah, very good. Ian, just before I let you go, I was looking at your bio on X. It says ex-CFAX sport editor as the first line on it. Absolutely fascinating job title. I mean, still very much missed the days of, well, it would have been Airtel over here, our version of Teletext, going to page 221 for the football scores at 3 p.m. on a Saturday. Do you miss it?
I do miss it. That was my favourite. I've had a lot of different jobs over the years. That was my favourite job. I used to use CFAX as a kid. I looked at it every day to get, you know, all the football news, and to actually work there and then become the sports editor was a dream job. It was brilliant. There was only 8 of us on a team working on a rotor, and you work on something everybody uses. So, you know, I worked at CFAX. Oh, you know, all my friends used it. We used it. Doing the scores on Saturday afternoon was great. Lots of brilliant things happened. For example, back in the early 90s, I worked at the World Snooker Championships as an outside broadcast. And that was before internet or anything like that. So we'd be in the press room on a Saturday afternoon, and the players would be crowded around our laptops to see the latest scores. There's no other way of getting the latest scores. All that sort of thing happened. Yeah, that was it was a dream job. Yeah, definitely.
Where were you getting the information from to input it?
So it all came from the press agencies. So we had like a wire service. So they'd send there's somebody each, as happens now, there's people at each game sending through the goal flashes, like you see on Sky at the bottom of the screen on the BBC. Those goal flashes that you see now will come into the system. We get those. Back in the day when I started doing that in the early 90s, literally it would come in on a printer. Somebody would tear the goal flash off, give it to you on a piece of paper, and you'd literally type it in to the CFAX system and it would go on air. And then I think at the snooker, it was a bit more advanced. I think we had it, you know, some sort of online system with it coming in. But yeah, it was great days. And then we merged with the BBC Sport website in 2004. Then in the UK, they turned CFAX off in 2011. Sadly, so
a sad day. I guess you had the red button sad over there. I think Teletext lasted a little bit longer here. Yeah. That must have been pretty thrilling. 3 o'clock on a Saturday. There's lots happening.
Yeah, very. It was manic. It was manic. Yeah, they were the best thing. When a lot of stuff was happening, you wanted to be first, but also accurate. So we used the ITV Teletext for our rivals. So we'd have 2 TV sets up. We'd have our headlines there, their headlines there. Who can get the scores up first without obviously getting it wrong? And you knew that everyone was using it. And then people would talk about the frustration of you'd have a set of 3 pages for each division and they'd come in to look at their team, it would always be the next page. But it did update faster than people thought. But yeah, it was a great, a really good place to work. We're a really sort of close-knit team, and people I worked with then are still good friends of mine now, which shows how good it was.
Yeah, fascinating, fascinating. You have been listening to Ian Westbrook, of course, ex-CFAX sport editor, now of BBC Sport, and of the Besotted Brentford podcast. Ian, good luck to you and to your team this season. Thanks for chatting to us.
Pleasure.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today.
18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.